All right.
Yeah.
This is probably
that's got to be like the like intro music to your podcast.
Real Estate of the Mind, Digital Cash Network. Real Estate. We'll make it happen. All right, enough messing around. Let's hit the intro graphic and get going. All right, so welcome. Happy Friday, everyone. I can't believe it's Friday. Like, I just freaking did a podcast like yesterday, and then now I got to do it again. Like, where did the week go? Seriously. I'm joined by the one and only Scott Cunningham, aka Scott C Business. Everywhere alternative networks are found, it's going to be Scott C Business. I haven't found you on MeWe, though, I don't think. Are you on MeWe?
I am on MeWe, but I don't think you can have like a normal username there, so I don't think I'm Scott C Business. I'm something random, like a bunch of numbers or something like that.
Yeah, because I always try to tag you on that, and I just can't really find it. And true. You know, now I kind of know why. But also, as First Light commented, are you in your new studio? Yes, I am. I can't give you too much of a tour. I might as well. You're not gonna know where I live from here. This is the house now, it's kind of modest, whatever. I haven't got it set up, but then there is like the front yard out that way. So yes.
4chan will find you.
Well, if they care, but like there's other ways they could find it better, probably easier. I will eventually have this whole place decked out. I kind of like this bare wall look for like talking head videos, I'm probably going to do longer exploration type videos. Like, yeah, I do those informational videos, but I maybe do like a half hour to an hour long. Like, I kind of got inspired, oddly enough, by, there's this YouTube channel, which I hate to give a shout out to, but unfortunately I have to, call it, like, I think it's Folding Ideas. And it's this like angry Canadian lefty who's bald, who hates everything. And, someone said, oh, you need to watch his episode on crypto and NFTs. And I watched the whole 2 hour long thing on his channel. And it was, it was just crap. Like, it was just a lot of like the usual, like, well, there's no control over it. It's just tech bros getting rich and stuff, which, there's always some truth and all that, but it's mostly just like hater stuff. So now I've talked all that smack about him. I did like his kind of channel setup and like the format. I'm like, oh, I could do those, except not be full of shit. And then, but I kind of like, the austere, like back wall kind of thing for that. So I'd have to have like this quarter, like this part austere, and then just like cram this part with like a bunch of stuff for like the show, or like have like a mobile stand with all my trappings on it and just like, just wheel it away when it's time to do another thing or something like that.
Or you just do the green screen that everyone's doing now. I've never been a fan of the green screen, but so many people like are doing those TikTok style where it's like them on a green screen and then the green screen is like whatever article they're talking about and they're just like, talking and pointing at it.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. Well, let's jump into the stories now that I've bored everyone with like personal type things. So first thing is this EU thing. The EU is apparently passed a law, or is in the process of trying to do that, to crack down on what they call unhosted wallets. Basically imagining, basically making your bank report you to the authorities every time you sent a certain amount of transactions out to a wallet that's not under their purview, kind of like turning into like in the US, I believe if you have like a $10,000 or more cash transaction, which is not the same as a $10,000 cash transaction just 5 years ago, thanks to inflation, you can maybe pay rent for that, whatever, then they have to like report that and stuff. So of course, the crypto industry is flipping out on that. Coinbase CEO, Brian Armstrong, he said, imagine if you required your bank to report you to the authorities every time you paid your rent merely because a transaction was over 1,000 euros. Or if you sent money to your cousin to help with groceries, you required your bank to collect and verify private information about your cousin before allowing you to send funds. Yeah, that's pretty insane. But yeah, well, let me just get your hot take on that, and we'll get into that.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we have our unhosted, quote unquote, wallets. But yeah, I mean, obviously, we need to be fighting against this as much as possible. We don't need more KYC for, you know, for just having a wallet. It's pretty insane. I don't know how they would enforce it aside from like exchanges not like letting you send them crypto without having to KYC. But then I would just say, you know, use decentralized exchanges. And we've got stuff like ThorSwap. So I think it's becoming, it's like a back and forth of regulators and people in the decentralized space sort of counteracting that.
Yeah. It's kind of like there's these two things that are coming to a head. I mean, obviously regulators have always been at odds with, you know, decent folk. but it's basically they're seeing the reality of things, both camps, and then the regulators are basically saying, like, you know how people like use crypto exchanges and they give their ID and all this kind of stuff and like bank type stuff. There's a KYC'd world and then there's all this other stuff. What if we just make it really hard to exit the KYC world with crypto? So people just spend through like a PayPal, or they spend through, you know, like PayPal, Venmo, whatever, Robinhood, like all those kinds of, you know, Coinbase, or, you know, pay with Coinbase. They like go straight through their thing. What if we just turn it all into like crypto banking and they're just trying to push it that way? And on the other hand, that pressure, that same pressure is pushing everyone who's in crypto before they, I just sign up for a Coinbase, buy some stuff, get it out. There you go. It's probably focusing, it's forcing more and more crypto activity or the incentives for that to be off exchanges, off those kinds of things, off platform. Yeah. And so there's fewer and fewer like conduits from the fiat world, from the fiat KYC world into what is crypto, into the matrix, right? And when you unplug, like there's fewer and fewer gateways now. And so it's going to basically put a lot of pressure on the few people that are still the gateways, like the people who like buy a bunch and then have to like liquidate bit by bit or whatever. But also it's going to put a lot of pressure on people to get paid in crypto, you know? And I mean, a lot of, there's, the other article coming up there in a little bit about the rewards, like you get your swipey, you get rewards. That's of course through KYC kind of services, but like people that say, yeah, I'll take crypto. And like, there's a lot of crypto rich people out there who just aped into this stuff, got it off the exchange. And now they're just like, I kind of don't need to like work anymore. I kind of don't need to, like, I have all this stuff sitting here. And I kind of don't want to like come back to an exchange and do all this nonsense. Like a lot of people, I think are willing to pay, a lot of crypto people are willing to pay a premium probably, or take their, or carefully select their business based on, can they spend crypto directly? Like I know a dude, I was just on the Porcupine Real Estate. They had a crypto 101 and crypto 202 little webinar thing last few weeks. And I was there helping educate their people because they've sold a few houses for crypto here in New Hampshire. And like a lot of crypto rich people are like, ah, I want to get paid in crypto. Or they have it and they want to buy the house with it because they just, you know, they aped into it. They got a whole bunch of it. And they're just like, I can pick and choose kind of because I got all the money. So I don't know. Which way do you think it's going to be pushed in? Which direction do you think this kind of stuff is going to push stuff in?
Yeah, I mean, when they were freezing bank accounts and stuff and they were blacklisting Bitcoin here in Canada, even like CEOs from exchanges were saying, yeah, don't leave your crypto on our exchanges, namely the CEO of Kraken. It just shows like even they know that it's not a good idea, and they're fully open about that, and they're like, yeah, I mean, you shouldn't leave your crypto on our exchanges because it's not real, like, quote unquote crypto anymore, because it's like, it's just under, it's like completely centralized, it's not what the actual ethos of crypto is supposed to be. And yeah, more people are just waking up to that and realizing, like, you gotta take it off exchanges, you gotta hold it somewhere, you gotta patronize places that aren't doing any KYC, you know, all of the above. Yeah, it's just, we're just gonna keep having like butting heads with regulators, and they always come up with silly reasons too, like, oh, we're trying to stop money laundering. I'm doing like a deep dive into money laundering, and it's like such a small fraction, and it's all just fiat cash. So it's pretty ridiculous that, you know, they'll always come up with, at face, it sounds like it's good, like we're trying to combat money laundering, it's for the good of humankind, but really it's just like another way for them to control what you're able to do. And yeah, I mean, once we start going into where we have central bank cryptocurrencies and they're gonna just get away from fiat entirely, then I could see it getting like really concerning, if people haven't, you know, taken these precautions already.
Yeah. It's also interesting with like jurisdictions, because for the most part, crypto, I would say a lot of crypto enthusiasts today or crypto players, I'm kind of the anomaly in that I'm someone who's been using crypto day to day for a very long time, but did mm-hmm. not get massive stores of wealth out of it. You know, like most people, you know, they're like tech. I think most of like the earlier crypto adopters were like tech bros or whatever, with like a fat developer salary of like a few hundred grand. And then they're just like, oh, this is cool, I'm going to throw like an easy 50 grand into like Bitcoin at 10 bucks or whatever. And then they just, there you go. That's probably yeah. most of the crypto demographic is those types of people, rather than just everyday, you know, and newer levels of those, like, oh, I'm like a first year, you know, accountant or something, and I'm into this stuff, and I put some 20 grand into Bitcoin, it's worth like 50, 60 now or something, like, but still like people with chunks of money. And I think that what they have a lot of, especially the digital nomad crypto people, which, by the way, shout out to the Nudge, who's been traveling around on crypto lately and making videos. He's also on Odyssey. Check him out. People like that, they can kind of live anywhere, sort of. They can kind of figure out their things. And the EU is coming up with this stuff. The EU is only a certain part of the world, though. And those pressures, it's a global world. People see that the crypto world, because it's like Kraken and Coinbase and stuff like this, all these big players are international, they're global. And so they see this stuff coming down the pipeline, it's affecting them, but then it's starting, there's people that hasn't affected yet, but are still getting exposed to that without actually having to suffer the consequences. And so there's a lot of people, like, you know, the US is talking about crackdowns on whatever, you know, we'll see what comes out of it. But there's places like, did or not the US, like a lot of South America, right? A lot of African countries, a lot of other places that are now kind of, the crypto there is being pushed in a less custodial, you know, more like real way because of regulations that are screwing over the poor Europeans and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that, like, and this is all like a setup to do like the CBDC thing. Like, the thing about the CBDCs is, like, what are you going to do it? Like, how many more years? Government's so freaking slow at this stuff because they suck. They're not very good at many things. And so they're CBDC next year. Okay, well, how long are they, like, going to figure it out before, like, you know, Stablequan comes up with, like, a whole new, like, system on Terra and just like, oh, it's already there, it's already worth a bunch of money and all that kind of stuff. And yeah. It's like, well, when are you going to catch up to what people are already doing in the crypto space that aren't the government? So I'm maybe an optimist, maybe it's self-serving to be like, oh yeah, everything that I want to happen is going to work out, but I still believe it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, everyone might just move to El Salvador or wherever. Mm-hmm. I think in the next like few years we'll see a lot more people moving to, you know, crypto-centric places that are for crypto and, you know, not overly regulating everything. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more people gravitating to that. And like you said, I mean, they can travel anywhere they want, and you can just bring all of your wealth with you in crypto. So it's it's not hard for these people to just like pick up everything and just go, especially if they're like all crypto. Just so easy for them to just pick up everything and just and leave, which you could never do with any other type of asset.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I do remember, like, right now, New Hampshire is in the process of putting through some bills that would do stuff like exempt DeFi developers and people running DeFi gateways from money transmitter regulations or whatever, which they haven't been anyway in the US, but it's coming. And of course, the library CEO, Jeremy Kaufman, has been fighting with the SEC a lot lately. He's been posting some interesting tweets. All that, like, it's kind of like the cannabis situation in the US, where cannabis has been illegal for a long time, like decades and decades. And it's still kind of illegal. It still is. Yet, starting with Colorado and then a whole bunch of places after that, a lot of states just started saying, screw you, we're legalizing it. And then there was some times when the feds would still try to arrest people for this stuff. But it's like, no, it's legal in the state, even though the feds don't think it is. And so I think if there's enough of this kind of stuff, enough states, like Wyoming has been probably the leader in crypto legislation. But if you have enough of these states that are passing crypto-friendly regulations, people are going to move to those states because it's super easy to just move across to a different state in the U.S. It's like easier than moving countries in the EU, you know, in the Eurozone. I think you're going to have people moving to more favorable jurisdictions, and then the feds will come in and be like, no, we still have jurisdiction. But then there's enough pressure of like, dude, you're harshing my vibe here, guys. Like we have a good thing going. We have all these crypto bros who are coming in and paying a ton in property taxes and stuff. And then you're trying to like mess this up. Like, and then there'll be kind of an uneasy standoff. And then it'll be mostly, I think the US federal government is going to go after big fish type people, but mostly just leave people alone. And then eventually there's going to be some sort of a truce. That's just kind of the way I see it going, but I could very well be wrong, and please feel free to call me on it when I am. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense to me. That seems like a reasonable way that this would all play out. And yeah, I mean, we got to use and vote with our dollar, but not our dollar, our crypto, actually show that we're serious.
Which that's a good segue into Terra Luna kind of thing. How familiar are you with Terra and all the stuff they've been doing? Because I'm kind of like, I'm not unfamiliar. I'm in between familiar and unfamiliar.
Yeah, I'd probably put myself in that same boat. You know, I've tested it out. You know, I tried Anchor, but I was pretty unimpressed since it's lending and it says staking, which I'm not surprised because that's always the case when it's over 15%. But, you know, like it's definitely an interesting technology. Looper is like the first Terra social platform, but it's really just Tribe, which used to be on EOS, and it sucks. It's terrible, but you can go on there and get free airdrops.
Everything's EOS. That's another thing, because like the most popular, the most used blockchain, as far as I am aware, at least according to, Coinmetrics, or it's not Coinmetrics. It's one of those things. Blocktivity, that was it. Blocktivity.info. According to that, the most used one is Wax, which is the NFT platform, which is an EOS-based thing. Because like everything, like that's something that I don't think enough people are giving credit to. On like a small tangent, is the proliferation of these delegated proof of stake-based kind of projects. Like, so obviously Bitcoin comes out there, and then everything is a Bitcoin clone, right? And then Ethereum comes out there, and there's a bunch of Ethereum competitors. I don't know how many Ethereum like forks there are. I mean, other than Ethereum Classic, obviously, but like that seems like there's a lot. I mean, there are a few. They're like EVM compatible, whatever else. But like the EOS legacy, the BitShares / then Steam / Hive / EOS legacy is way bigger than people would be willing to admit today, I think, as far as like just a good chunk of the crypto space is based on that stuff kind of chugging on behind the scenes, not really making any headlines. I don't know if you noticed that.
EOS itself is like so congested and unusable, but EOS.io is where you find a lot of the stuff that's actually being used today. I mean, they did, I remember when they did voice, and then that was a huge flop. And now whatever voice is supposed to be like every single social media post is an NFT. I don't know. It's kind of confusing.
And Hilawi comments EOS triggering. Yes, because he was an EOS investor, and it didn't go so well apparently. But back to the sort of like the stablecoin story. So Terraform Labs CEO Do Kwon has conceded that a crash in the price of Bitcoin would be negative for the stability of Terra USD, but he expects the Bitcoin price to go up over long term. And that's what he said on Laura Shin's Unchained podcast, which she needs to have me on at some point. But you know, I'm not holding out because I'm not, whatever. But so as far as I'm aware, the Luna stablecoin protocol or whatever works by you have the Terra Luna, like the actual like on-chain token, and when you mint the stablecoin, you burn whatever dollar amount of that of Luna in order to mint the UST, and then the opposite happens the other way when you go in and out, and so it kind of has like a nice little balancing effect. If you get to a point in your life, if you get to a point where the UST supply, the market cap of UST starts to exceed the market cap of Luna, you start to have some interesting dynamics where if the price goes down enough, you could lose the peg on the way out. But so far, it seems like a pretty stable like back and forth mechanism. I know Thorchain is using a very similar one for ThorFi, where they're going to burn Rune to mint Thor USD and then go back and forth like that. It's a little bit, I kind of trust that part a little bit more just because of the uses for Rune. Like, for example, the all pools are 50-50 Rune, whatever else. And then you have to bond it to do nodes and all this other kind of stuff. And all like synthetics and stuff, all that, because they're on the Thorchain network itself and not on-chain on the other ones, on the other blockchains. There's a lot more uses for that. So the likelihood of the Rune value going away and just, you know, wrecking these stablecoin people is much lower than Terra in the short term, I think. But so Terra's been buying billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin in order to put that as a reserve too. It's like a gold, digital gold backed stablecoin kind of in some ways. And I think that's, I really don't know how I feel about this. I have quite a few different feelings. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, because it's not like peg, like it's not like the Bitcoin is used to back the value, I guess, right? Because it's like 40% of the collateral is Bitcoin. But I mean, yeah, like they seem pretty confident that it's not going to go down and cause problems for them. So I mean, that's bullish. So like I'll take the win. One issue that I saw with Terra was like I wanted to find out what was a really good coin to stake, and I was staking Atom and Luna, and just to claim my rewards was like $2 or something. And I was like, okay, well, if this is a new chain and it already costs $2 to claim, like the gas fees are just kind of insane already. So I stopped staking Luna, and I just decided to just mainly focus on Atom. But, you know, like if it's supposed to in some way compete with, you know, like ETH. I mean, it's not really competing with ETH, but it's, you know, it's doing its own thing. I think gas fees are a concern, but at the same time, you know, I thought ETH 2.0 would have already launched by now. And obviously that did not happen. So,
well, imagine I'm waiting for Dash Evolution since the end of 2018, but Let's not go there.
I mean, Rune is an amazing like technology and mm-hmm. and cryptocurrency. I mean, even since like I first invested in it, it's like up like 5x. So yeah. I mean, even if you're just doing it speculatively, it's really been going on a run lately. And you know, everyone's like, oh well, the technicals, it's oversold, it's gonna crash anytime soon. And I keep checking back and it's just higher every time. And I'm like, wow, this Rune just keeps on going.
But yeah, the thing is, the fundamentals though are there because like support for new coins is coming all the time. Like they just added Luna, for example. They're built like the fact that they deployed synthetics, which basically lets you trade as if it was like a centralized exchange, like just easy, like with all the on-chain crap, except it's still like decentralized it on chain, just a different chain, right? And just all the stuff they've been deploying, and then their trading volume just really spiked. Like I'm looking at this, like the, you know, just show the little phone thingy. Like that's been what their trading volume's been going on. Like,
yeah.
And that's mostly with synthetics, and then the giant ones recently have been like Luna, and like even like so I'm staking some BUSD on there right now because that was like the only stable coin. I just hedged a little bit of my stuff into stable coin just to see. And as of right now, the APY went down a little bit to only 65% per year, and it's just like, dude, that is insane. And I'm sure a lot of it is because of trading volume, but there's also like block rewards that are subsidizing a little bit of that for now. Let's see, what is the UST on Thor chain? What are they getting? They are getting 36%, 36.60% right now. Wow. So the thing is like, the thing that gives me the heat, so Terra seems to be interesting because there's a lot of demand for fiat valued things, you know, in this crypto world. And I don't really care too much personally, but I'm starting to understand why this is a huge thing, because it lets people get away from the old like bank system and start just like moving things off those centralized exchanges with explicit fiat pairs and all the shitty bank stuff. It's basically moving the fiat economy to crypto before eventually I don't think that we're going to have fiat stable coins in the more distant future. But the thing is, in one, everyone liked Luna because, oh yeah, it's like this cool algorithmic stable coin, like it's just done this way and that way, and like, oh, that's cool, just trust the tech and it's like decentralized and stuff. All right, okay, I can buy that. But then they start doing a bunch of weird shit. Like, first off, like almost all the staking is done on Anchor. Like almost like a giant chunk of the market cap is on this Anchor thing, which gives you about 19.5%, and I am staking on there because, you know, hedge it in case BUSD crashes on Thorchain or whatever, right? But that's like, you know, it's like a lending platform. The problem is they have not nearly enough lending, like borrowing. There's way more lenders than borrowers, and so that almost 20% is subsidized right now by Luna. They're just dumping tons and tons of UST into this subsidy fund just to like get stuff going. And that's not sustainable. And the problem with not sustainable isn't that it goes away at some point, because I don't care. I'm just not making 20% anymore. I'll just get rid of it. It's just that a crash happens and it could affect the whole ecosystem. And on the other side, like when they got this big old Luna bubble, this, you know, and then they're using it to buy a ton of Bitcoin. And I think that's a good idea, but it gives warning bells at the same time for me personally. And this is not, none of this is investment advice. Obviously, I should make that super clear as well. And also none of this is heavily researched either. So I, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Who cares? But I just see, like, it's a good idea to back it with Bitcoin, I guess, because it's not just like, well, it just makes investors feel better. The problem is, why would investors not feel good? Like, you don't, it's almost like you don't believe in your product to work. And on the one hand, you're like, well, I want to buy a proven tech, a proven store of value to assert, well, whatever. I mean, whatever you want to think about the store of value with Bitcoin. But like,
well, it's, what did Quan say in this article? He said something like, we want to be the layer 2 of solution for Bitcoin. Yeah, I think that's what he said.
Well, a bunch of lightning hose mad, yeah,
proclaiming
you
know? That Terra will be the layer two solution for the Bitcoin network. He argued that with Terra. Yeah.
I mean, I'm into just like trying to get like a layer one for every, like everything works layer one, or a native layer two that like still works well. But like, and the other thing is, what happened to this like decentralized algorithm type deal? If it's still like a company is like buying an ass load of Bitcoin just in case their token, like so they could prop up the token, like, I don't know. And this is where it gets like less, much less technical, like much less, like rational, and much more like, and just the feel gets the heebie-jeebies is like, I feel like you could have an aggressive emission schedule in the beginning program, which, you know, is like, it's like Kickstarter money to get the stuff off the ground, but it's still like a programmed in thing. It's like inflation in the token. And over time it goes down as more get produced. Okay. I get that. But the fact there's this dude out there who's just a baller out of control, just buying big stacks of Bitcoin and I'll throw it in here. I'll make sure it doesn't work. I anchor. I'm dumping. It's not like, well, there's an inflation that's programmed in to make Anchor super like attractive. And it's, but then it goes down over years. It's just all programmed in. It's just like part of the thing. It's like, no, there's literally a dude just dumping buckets of like UST in here, or just buying buckets of Bitcoin so he can throw it out of there. It just, it feels a little like, I would say scammy's not the right word, but it feels a little centralized and not in like the good way. And also on a much more emotional level, it kind of gives off like Justin Sun vibes, where he's like, oh yeah, Tron is like the ETH, which it, man, this is, I'm talking way too much shit for how strong they actually feel on this, but who cares? That's why you tune in. It's like, cause Justin Sun made his own, like, oh, this is my own like ETH killer type deal, and is doing all this cool stuff or whatever. And then he just like takes the money and starts like buying up real things. Like,
oh, and then tanking them.
Yeah. But it's just like, it feels the same way. Like it's almost, it gives off, and this is not a rational argument, by the way, before you say, oh, this guy's full of shit. Well, this is just a feeling. The feeling I'm getting, the vibe is as if he's making all this like fake money, and then he's using it to buy a bunch of real money before people realize it. And then at some point there's going to be the greater fool who's left holding the bag. That's just the vibe, but that's a very unfair thing to say. I'm just saying it's a vibe, but I hope that this is just big moves to make Terra seem more attractive and get things going while he's on a mission to, to free the finances of the world. And he's just doing big splashy things to like make sure everything holds together and everyone jumps on board right away. And then it just, over time, it's just going to end up being that, you know, no worry at all. I'm sorry for being a fudster here, but whatever.
I think you're right, though. I mean, like, Tron would have been the ETH killer if it would have been the ETH killer, because it's really cheap to use if you stake a little bit. Like, they have tons of dApps. You can do your USDT on there, and it's, like, barely any gas fees or anything like that. If it would, like, if there was an ETH killer, I think it would have been Tron, but obviously Justin Sun's makes it very hard to get behind it. You know, buying up Steam, tanking that, buying up DLive, tanking that. He's just throwing money around like crazy. And I think you're exactly right. Like, if they're going to be doing all this stuff, but then spending all the money on the side, you're kind of like, okay, well, what's actually going on here? And this is probably a good segue into the article about Binance too, because when Justin Sun did take over Steam, he had the help of Binance. And I always tell people, like, yeah, don't trust these centralized exchanges, because they've literally taken users' funds, stopped you from being able to withdraw, and then staked it and did governance decisions on a chain. And it's like, I can't believe that's like legal, or like there was no repercussions for doing that. But I mean, I'm kind of disappointed that they dismissed the class action lawsuit.
Yeah. So to just read that line and stuff, Binance wins dismissal of class action over 2018 tokens that tanked. The judge ruled domestic law doesn't apply to Binance as it is not an exchange domestic to the United States, and the case was filed too late. There's a bunch of other stuff in there, but that's kind of like the long and short of it. It's kind of funny how I feel on this one, because I am a critic of Binance's Binance stuff, you know, their shady shit that they do. At the same time, like this lawsuit, like, it just seems like they say, we bought a bunch of tokens, they tanked, and now we're mad. And, oh, it should have been a security. Like, you knew what you were doing. It's like, hoes mad, you know? Like, you knew what you were doing. You knew you were buying a bunch of shit coins and hoping to get, like, again, there's some good coins in there. ES is in there. It's not a complete shit coin. But, like, they bought a bunch of tokens, like everyone. They lost money because that's what you do when you speculate. Some of them take off, some don't. And then they just lost a bunch of money, and now I'd be like, but U.S. law and let's securities stuff. Like, if you wanted a regulated securities offering, you would have gotten to a regulated securities exchange, but you didn't. You went to the king of the shit coins, Binance. You gambled your stupid casino money, and now you're mad. Like, I have, after this thing's being filed, the people that filed this, I don't have any sympathy for. The people who lost money and took it like a man and just like said, I lost money, I have sympathy for them though.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, I'd rather like there be a class action lawsuit against them for stealing people's funds and using them for governance decisions.
For real things.
Again, I don't know how that's like legal or like how there was no repercussions for that. But yeah, I mean, that's what I would really like to see them go after. Obviously, I'm not of the mind that if you lose money, it's the exchange's fault. 90% of what I do is tell people to stop investing in terrible investments. Like, I made a tweet the other day and I said, I can tell with up to 99% accuracy of which coins are going to, you know, do terribly. And it's because it's most of them. So like it's not like you have to like really make a guess. Most coins are going to be terrible if they're like a shit coin and it's not going to work out. So basically just don't invest in shit coins. But then obviously you got a whole troop of people who are like, well, Bitcoin could be a shit coin if you look at it a certain way. So like, aha. And it's like, okay, well, you can't even have a conversation with someone like that. So
yeah, that is true. The thing about the shitcoin thing, like, don't invest in shitcoins. Like, if you invest in solid fundamentals based projects, you still at best have like a 1 in 10 chance that it's not going to go to zero. You know, like, I'm just thinking about all like the stuff, like Namecoin way back in the day, that was kind of cool, but then it didn't go anywhere. You know, well, what about MadeSafe? You know, wasn't that interesting? I thought they worked on some cool stuff. What about Library, right? People who invest in Library. I don't really care because, like, I never traded anything for LBC, you know? I just didn't because I just earned it all or got it from the subsidies or whatever. And I'm using Odyssey, so I'm happy with how things have gone because I'm not an investor. I'm just, like, a user. And but, like, imagine people like, oh, Library, they're actually building, and then they buy a bunch of tokens. It goes... I mean, that's the SEC kind of helped that happen, but like, yeah, you could add,
although I would argue that there was a little bit of funny business how they were like giving out the 100,000 airdrop to people after the SEC case, but they hadn't actually announced it yet. So then we were all promoting it heavily for years. And then they're like, oh, by the way, you know, there's an SEC case, like, and then it goes up to like 40 cents, then it tanks and it's like, yeah, I mean, that seems a little weird to me, but
the SEC case, I don't know if they could have talked about it. Like, I don't think they legally could have at that stage. It wasn't until it was announced publicly that.
Well, that's why I'm saying, like, it's weird that they would give out the airdrops and then say, you can't do this for 2 years. Please promote the project. Like, because obviously you want the price to go up. So, you know, those people are obviously, you know, promoting Library to some degree, but they know that the SEC lawsuit will be announced before that date happens and that the price might tank. And it's all a little convenient. I might be a little conspiratorial on library, but it just, it seems a little convenient how everything lines up.
Well, let me give a, so what I probably think is they knew this was hanging over their head. They didn't know that in a couple years stuff would happen. They knew at some point in the future date, and then they just said, let's go ahead anyway. And so, I mean, it is, there is a little bit of like a, how much do you want to promote the token if you're under investigation by the SEC and it's not looking so good so far? I don't know. The whole unlocking thing, because I didn't get one of those because I'm not cool. But like, they said some funny business, right? Like it was like, it would just automatically get unlocked when the code's already done, but then it didn't.
It's still not done, eh? It's been like over 2 months, and I did say that they wouldn't have it done, and here we are. So, I mean, that was just, you know, me guessing, but it isn't done yet, and they still just say, oh, just, you know, do this really complex set of things, or just email us your keys and we'll just do it for you, I guess, which is just seems weird, but like that's the reality right now.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's, I'd like to get to the bottom of the technical bits, because that, like, it seems like they gave people their money, but it just doesn't seem like that's what they promised, that they give the money. It seems like they promised that it would do itself. I'm kind of like mixed feelings on the creator program type thingy, because they gave subsidies, right? Like, because it's, you're supposed to make money through people paying for content directly or ads and stuff, like all the usual monetization models. But then they're like, well, to kickstart this, we the company will give you money, like in credits and as a subsidy. And, you know, that's fine. But then the arbitrary changing of that at different points, rather than like a planned reduction over time, you know, there's nothing that says I can't do that. It just like makes it harder to be like, oh yeah, get a bunch of creators in, then like, okay, I'm making all this money, and then you're like, eh, well, we can't pay you that anymore. Sorry. It's like,
I don't know.
It's not like they can't do it or that's shady, but it's not super above board either. It's kind of in that middle
ground.
Plus,
it's like,
you know?
KYC to earn as well. You know, they basically did everything that I was promoting that they weren't really doing at the beginning. And now it's like all of that is the opposite. Like I had someone today, you know, respond to one of my tweets on my little tweet storm about library. And they said, oh, well, here, look, you can view that banned channel on this random little server that I spun up. I'm like, okay, well, how many people are spinning up their own servers of library to view these blocked channels? The reality is like no one is doing that. And everyone was led to believe that Odyssey and library were very different. They're the exact same. Like there's no difference in terms of decentralization or like what channels will be blocked or not blocked. It'll be the exact same on Odyssey as it is on the like decentralized application.
Yeah, I think that what really needs to happen is to have a decentralized, like a fork, like an alternative client that's like popular and well-maintained. The problem is just as far as like the project, it's too small of a project for that to really happen. Like when you have a small enough project, it becomes centralized, not because it's structurally centralized, just because there's just not enough interest to like, not enough money thrown in there where people are like, oh, I can develop this one thing. And that's like the big Bitcoin advantage is the size. Just because of all the money and the size and the time period involved, it's just there's so much room for people. I'm going to make this implementation. I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to like run this. I don't like how they did that. And I would like to see that. Like, I personally don't find any content on Odyssey that, like, I want to find. That is like banned or something, like it doesn't affect me at all. But just for like argument's sake, I would like to see an uncensored client fork, which I'm sure there is, right? I'm sure there's a couple, but just like one that's like not crap, like that's just like maintained well enough. It's like dark library, library after dark or something like that. And also like Odyssey got spun off into a separate company and it was always supposed to be the centralized sort of YouTube-ish front end. I can't wait until they just get deeper into that, right? And become more of a YouTube alternative rather than whatever. Because I kind of feel like there's like they're in this like in between zone, or they their library was like library.tv and all that was an in between zone of like, well, no, we're better because we run on decentralized architecture, but we're still kind of centralized in some ways. And like, eh, it's like, dude, just own it. Be another YouTube that just backs everything up on this other stuff. And like, but do stuff like for example, they're adding ads and like Odyssey Premium and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, that's great, but I want to monetize my channel now. Like, I want to just fiat monetize it or whatever, you know, once I figure out how to get that whole thing converted into crypto and stuff, right? But I'll like, I want to start enabling monetization. So, like, that's one of the reasons I'm sharing. I mean, I promoted Odyssey exclusively with this my channel for years. And last couple months, I've been sharing the YouTube link instead just to kind of balance things out. Same. But not just to balance things out because, you know, I have, like, 2,000 subscribers or 22, whatever it is, on YouTube. But then I have, like, 8,800 on Odyssey. I don't want to balance that out. But also, if I do manage to turn on, like, fiat monetization, figure that out, like, I'm getting paid by to drive traffic to YouTube. And I'm not really going to be paid very much other than this one. I did get a super chat, right? A hyper chat right here in credits from @Bitcoin. I know you're not the real Bitcoin, but it might be a fork. No, it says BTC, ETH, and let LBC maximalist. Oh, thank you for your contribution. Yeah. But yeah, it just like, and then as soon as Odyssey starts allowing you to monetize your videos like YouTube does, and it makes more sense, like if I do the ROI comparison, I'm just going to like start promoting Odyssey again. Just like, you know, because like none of us are, we're all on YouTube, right? We understand it's like centralized garbage and they love to censor, but like you use it because it provides what you want. And there you go. The other thing though is, so a buddy of mine started working for Odyssey who used to do, he worked at Foursquare for many years and like designed all their stuff. And he's working on like a decentralized search algo type thing that you're going to start that could hopefully be exported to like library and like actual protocol stuff. So I'd love to have him on the podcast. Shout out to the Local Maximum, his podcast. You know, a lot of shout outs today, but that would be really like, so like my YouTube videos these days, if I put up a video, I think it's a couple hundred views or so. But then once in a while, I get something that get a few thousand views. Like my last few Dash podcasts got from like 3,000 to 4,000 views. And that's just because some keywords got picked up and people just went and they rank super high because not a lot of people do Dash content. So when I do, it ranks really high. And so, and there's been the last couple months, a huge surge in interest in Dash and some things, possibly because Ryan Taylor resigned and people are just can't find info on that. So they're looking up Dash CEO and then there he is on my podcast. So they like jump in, but like that doesn't happen on Odyssey. I never get a video accidentally blow up anymore. So
true.
That's like, I just want Odyssey to become a better YouTube that backs all my shit up on library. You know, that's kind of what I want. Where I wanted to go.
Yeah, plus I'd say like the dynamics of how library kind of worked originally and how it works now are dramatically different. Like and here I am like criticizing library and it's like I'm like the 46th top creator or whatever, and you know, it's only a detriment to me to be like shooting myself in the foot and being like, ah, screw this platform. But you know, like originally it was very technical. It was like, how much are you supporting on your video? Are you doing like the right publishes? Like I was hardcore gaming the system. Like I was doing reposts and putting like really ideal keywords. And I was always making sure that I had the top of every keyword so that if someone searched it, like I did everything possible. And like now none of that matters. Like you could put 100,000 on a video and it will not get any more views than if you just post it normally. And I don't know, a lot of the dynamics have all kind of like gone away, and any reason that I had previously to hold LBC is kind of gone, aside from the fact that I like it's increasing the fees to post videos for me are just going up every time I post. So like it's becoming less feasible, I would assume, for new creators to even use Library because they have to pay more and more and they're giving out less and less. So it's even less possible. You would have to go and buy it. And through the app, it's generally, people are using fiat a lot of the times to buy LBC. So it's very like weird that you have to go on Library, but then you buy LBC with fiat just to be able to post a video when the whole point of using Library was like getting out of YouTube and like it being easier, not, you know, spending money to post and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, they'll say, well, there's no free lunch, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you could go on, if you said it to a layman, like, oh yes, Hive, there's no free lunch either. You have to use resource credits, but mm-hmm. you're not actually losing like value or money. Whereas like I'm spending money with LBC to be able to post content. So mm-hmm. I don't know, like I've always been against having to spend money just because it's not really feasible. And for like the layman, they're always going to just be like, okay, well, no, I'm not going to whip out my credit card so I can post a video. You know, just use something that doesn't have this like restraint or restriction. And yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, Library works out, they get a great ad model and everything is, you know, fantastic. And then I'll be more gung-ho about it, but I know it's not, mm-hmm. you know, some decentralized solution that is comparable to like Hive or anything like that. Basically, I'm of the mind now that Hive is like the only safe place because, you know, even if I look at something like Re.cash, which you can earn a lot of money on, but
yeah, it's
completely funded by, yeah, I mean, it's like 100% funded by Mark DeMiesel. The team is anonymous. They banned themselves for some reason. And it's just very confusing. Like, I don't know how much money they have left in their donation pool. It could end tomorrow. Who knows? So like the only thing that I really find reliable nowadays is Hive. But yeah, I mean, it's a sad reality because all like half of what I do is trying to find viable places to share on social and earn crypto. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a lot of things are getting squeezed out and it's just, it's kind of yeah. disappointing to see.
Well, I think that's because a lot of these things are sort of built on shaky ground of like, you know, the VC money type thing, which all companies, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, operate the same way, right? You get a bunch of investor money, you use it, and then at some point you got to start making money. Like, I was using Pinterest for a few years, and they had no business model at all yet. And then it was just on free, running on free money. And then eventually they added it. And by that time they added, I was already gone anyway. And just like, I don't know if that worked out. But it's funny because like, I think the free coin model usually doesn't work. The Hive/Steam thing is an interesting take on things. And Library, I think, figured out like conceptually how they're going to make things work and think, oh, this is great, we'll just do it this way. And then a lot of reality hit them right in the freaking face, just boom. Like, part of it is mm-hmm. just like, okay, well, you just pay a little credit to unlock content and stuff, and people are like, nah, they're not gonna do that. You know, and then like people just want it like free and, you know, whatever. And so they're like, okay, well, now we got the, then they have the problem acquiring the token. Like, it becomes difficult because of reality, but then even more because of the SEC thing makes it hard to trade. And then it's like, oh shit. And then they're kind of scrambling to figure out what's their model. Like, how are they going to make this thing work? And then they figure, well, we'll do what YouTube did, but not do any of the stupid stuff they did and just use LBC to like post everything on the blockchain as the back end. And then I actually don't think that's a bad model long term if they become a friendlier YouTube, right? Which I don't think is that. I don't think that part's revolutionary. I think it's better than YouTube, but I don't think it's revolutionary. But then they just give they subsidize, like, because there's always been ads on the site and library.tv, I think, if you're not signed in, if you don't have an account, right?
Yeah.
It's so they've always had revenue from there. It's so if they just take that revenue and buy LBC to post people, to give to creators to post their content, And other than that, it's just like, you know, because then everyone can post for free to a certain limit, right? And then to just make balance it out, basically do it just like YouTube does, except instead of like paying for AWS hosting or whatever, they just pay credits to post on the decentralized blockchain and stuff, and have like an export your channel if you really want to kind of feature. And then if they start censoring too much, or people don't like it, or then they want like, then that, if it becomes big enough, if Odyssey becomes big enough, then people will make other competitors on Library that just like, well, this is the unfiltered one, or this is like Porn Odyssey, for example, right? Odyssey, the Odyssey of the booty or whatever. I don't know. There's like, there will be other things that come out of that. And I think they just, they came out of the gate a little like utopian, and then they got a lot of people who were on this utopian idea, and then reality hit them and they couldn't keep it. They couldn't make it work. So they decided to pivot to something they could make work, which is fine. And new people coming in are fine with that. But then there's those old, the older generation like us, more you than me, but still like that came in during the utopian phase. And then their inability to deliver on those expectations is affecting us more. You know, it's like, well, we did our end of the deal. We created and published on your platform and did all this stuff and promoted it. We did our end of the deal, but like your reality is affecting us now. And it's just like, kind of leaves a little bit of a sad, sour taste to the mouth, maybe.
Yeah. And like, you know, because it was a scarce tokenomics model, like I think a big part of the issue was just that, like, and then they're like, oh, now we're running out, so we have to continually pull back on rewards and do things. And it's like, yeah, I think they just, they gave themselves not enough time. And yeah, I don't think having a scarce tokenomic model like made sense. You know, like you said, like they would have to buy it back and then give it to us. And it just becomes like a challenge to make it actually work very well. And yeah, I mean, I have all the hope that, you know, they like the ad model works out, and you know, and then I'll start promoting it again and using it more. And I'd be happy to, you know, say that I was wrong or whatever, and just like jump back on the Library train. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just I'm kind of like a pessimist at this point for a lot of social platforms. And unless it's like 100% decentralized by design, it's hard to just like trust it. Whether it's intentional or, you know, an issue of not having enough developers or whatever, because like no one's really building or developing on Library from what I can see. And there's just an ungodly amount of people developing and building their own interfaces and stuff on Hive. And that's one of like the big disparities that I see. It's like, yeah, I mean, people will say, yeah, you can spin up your own interface for Library, but do people? Not really. So, you know, it might come down to someone just being passionate, and they go and make something, and then people start using that, and maybe that changes some things around. But it's also hard to, like, it's a big pill to swallow when they also have full centralized control over monetization. And you know, it's just, it's really hard. And it's KYC. So like, they really, really make that hard for like people who are like really into the crypto ethos, the blockchain ethos. It's a really big pill to swallow to be like, by the way, anything that you earn is like 100% like up to us, and you have to KYC. So it's
I should get like interject a little bit of nuance into the KYC thing. It is verification for sure. And there's ways you can verify which are KYC, like a credit card or an ID or things like that. I mean, again, this is just speaking from when I did it, because it could have changed and I would have no idea.
Yeah, no, it has changed. Because like, so I've had a lot of people
Discord notification or anything?
Yeah, like, because I did originally, I didn't have to do any serious KYC. It was just like an email. But since then, now they require like all this different stuff, and you have to, you know, give them all this information, and like they don't make it easy. And a lot of people who have seen my original video, they reach out to me and they say, well, how do I verify the way that you did? And I try to look and it's not available anymore. So it is, it is pretty like pretty strict KYC now. I can't remember exactly what it is, but they do ask a lot of information from you. And yeah, it's just not very ideal.
Yeah. That's the thing that has to like, you know, change. I think that once they figure out the model, things will get a little bit better. But the thing, it's kind of funny because like Steam and then Hive went won out as the social blockchain, whereas Library put all their chips into being a reliable back end for a YouTube competitor, and Odyssey is taking the number one. Well, yeah, maybe there's like Rumble and BitChute and stuff, but like, you know, the number one that's not those things, YouTube competitor type thing out there, YouTube successor. And it's kind of funny how like the paths sort of diverged on that thing. It's going to be interesting to see how the whole thing kind of develops, because I think that crypto monetization and all that kind of stuff is going to be, is going to go into, it's going to hit every social network at some point. I mean, Twitter has their like lame ass little like tipping function or whatever in there, but it's something.
Yeah.
And like, it's coming. And that's the thing about when I was talking about like NFT stuff for the channel is I think what people are going to start, what creators are going to start doing is more direct monetization of the attention, which is their valuable resources, eyeballs on them. Whereas before, everything was indirect. Like people just like, oh, Mr. Beast or whatever gets like a jillion views on YouTube. And then it just, all the ad money comes in or whatever, and the partner program, whatever it is. Rather than that, where it's like, you know, like, I'm just going to sit here and get eyeballs and then someone else will figure out the monetization, give me a cut. Rather than that, I think that, especially because it's everywhere, kind of like everyone's on different platforms, different kind of things. Like, I think people are going to do more, like people have their own sponsorships and stuff on their own channels that are not, you know, that are apart from that. But like, I think people start doing more things like selling their NFTs to provide exclusive access. And all they need from the platform is, you know, they'll let the YouTuber, the Odyssey, put an ad on their video, even if they don't get the money for it, as long as they get to just upload their shit and then they get paid in a different way. They kind of do like the runaround on that thing. So it'll be kind of interesting, but, platforms that do actually pay you for putting your stuff are they're going to become, if they can reliably do that long term, I do think that they're going to if they could figure it out long term, right, to make it actually work out long term, which, like, you know, Hive's pretty new, even though the Steemit model is really not that new. If Hive is still lucrative for people in like 5 years, I think that's going to be some really cool stuff. Like, people are going to be blowing up all over Hive, or they're going to be trying to build like an Odyssey type thing, but put it on Hive, like a YouTube level of like an actual like good product. Put it all over.
Like,
there.
Do you know ThreeSpeak?
Yeah, I used to upload to ThreeSpeak. I stopped because I didn't get, you know, and anywhere. It was like so weird with like the monetization, like the amount I'd get from the videos was like usually like it was a trending really far down. Every once in a while I'd get like a few bucks on one, but then I get like nothing. And then it became more and more difficult to upload thumbnails and stuff because they started increasing like limitations of size. So I'd like make custom thumbnails just for ThreeSpeak and stuff like that.
I do remember that. They've fixed a lot of that now where you don't have to like, it's not as like challenging to upload there. And I think it also kind of depends on like the community that you upload to, because they're launching like a ThreeSpeak community token now too. And you know, I've always just posted to Leo Finance just because it's always been profitable. But you know, communities are kind of their own little niche thing. I don't know if you know BitTube, but like they recently like just reset everything, and I was like, all of my subscribers were like just wiped, and They just deleted everyone's videos, and it was all running on PeerTube, which is even more ironic because it's supposed to be so like decentralized, distributed, and here we are. So,
yeah, the space is definitely in a nice little like reset moment, like the crypto space. But I think that like the demand for that was like people like, you know, Randy Hilarski. I don't know if you know that dude.
Yeah,
see his stuff. Like people like him that are just like, I'm on all the platforms vacuuming up all the free coins. Like those are the people who are using it, where it wasn't like real people, you know, regular folks. But now that everyone's starting to come into crypto, I think the demand for a crypto monetized platform is kind of going up, which is a great segue into this last story of the day, which is the future of cashback. Companies adopt crypto back rewards for card purchases. So like, for example, BlockFi had a Visa-backed Bitcoin rewards card. Venmo is now allowing users to buy crypto with their cashback rewards. And of course, we know like crypto.com is like the one that everyone's talking about and stuff. But there's a million of these cards that are now letting you like get rewards points in crypto. And yeah, what's your hot take on that before I start rambling?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's awesome. My only concern is that all these like payment processors and stuff are really aiming to just like centralize crypto. I always have a lot of people who come to me and they're like, oh yeah, like I invest in Bitcoin or Ethereum. And my first question is, but where? Because if it's on Wealthsimple or Robinhood or PayPal, like you just got the worst of every possible situation. And they always are misled too, because they're always like, oh, well, no, it's like, it's in my TFSA or whatever on Wealthsimple. And I'm like, no, read the FAQ. They've got it. It's not in your TFSA. So you're going to pay full taxes on it and you just get no benefits whatsoever. And they control what you can do with it. So it's like, if you're going to do it and you want to avoid taxes, you do it through an ETF. If you're at least in Canada, we have a tax-free savings account. You'd have to do it through an ETF, or you just buy the crypto directly so that at least you get the decentralization. But if you do PayPal or any of these stock exchanges that are selling you the crypto directly, you just get the worst of every possible situation. But I mean, that aside, I do think it's good that, you know, normal people are getting exposure to crypto through cards, and you know, they can maybe now at least sort of see this Bitcoin that they've earned, and then they go back and they look at it later and it's way up in value and they're like, okay, maybe there's something here. And then they start to explore it a little bit more. I think that is like a good way to get people into the space. I mean, when PayPal originally did have crypto, I said it's good for like, you know, adoption, but it's terrible for like the ethos of crypto.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's all these like things. I wouldn't recommend people get into crypto or get earning crypto or save it that way. That being said, it's the ultimate normie onboarding tool, because first off, not everyone is going, like, I think we'd be shocked, maybe not the crowds that we run in, but how few people explicitly invest like anything. Like literally they just don't. Like, I think that that's kind of like the mindset of a lot of like middle to lower middle class or low class people in the US is, and I'm sure Canada is probably the same way. Well, this whole Social Security thing in the US was like the one like socialist program type thing that came out, and people just assume that the government's going to take care of them, you know? So they like never really invested. And then for people who have like more established jobs, a lot of them do like 401ks and like actual investment stuff through there. But as far as a person having money in their bank account or wherever they have their money, and then just being like, I'm going to buy something with this that's going to go up in value over time. Like almost no one does this stuff. Like, or I wouldn't say almost no one, but it's I would say it's a minority of people do like explicitly invest, especially before they're like 40 or something, I think. And so, having it auto invest, just like, I mean, that's why there's those, what was it called? That there was that service in some some bank thing that like it would round up your change. Like I'm pretty sure every and it would like invest in like a stock portfolio or something. Like you'd spend like $7.68 and it would charge you $8, but then the remainder would go into like a stock investment thing.
Oh and, yeah. I forget the name though.
Was it like Roundly X or was that the Bitcoin version? Because there's a crypto version then too that did the exact same thing except it put it in crypto. And so like that stuff like gets people to actually invest because they're not going to do it otherwise. And then you start adding these crypto cashback reward type things that you swipe your card because that's what people do. And then you just get crypto. And now it's getting people to invest where they weren't before in crypto, which is, you know, it's good.
Yeah. I think also, the sad reality is you have to like gamify stuff. Sorry to cut you off. Yeah, but like,
no, it's true.
Like if you know, like ShakePay, for example, I know so many people who just love the idea of ShakePay where like you can buy crypto and then you shake your phone and you get a tiny amount of free Bitcoin. But they literally say in their FAQ that they're buying it under market value and they sell it over market value. So it's like that's where their money is being made. But they give away a little bit of tiny free Bitcoin when you shake your phone. So it's fine. And it's just like people don't care as long as it's like interesting or like gamified in some way. And I think that's kind of also what you see with like these crypto back rewards.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way people work, as the way humans work. That's the way people have been designed to work is to say, well, if I do this action, I get shiny thing good.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's literally how people are not like living in caves is that programming. And so if you hack the programming or you play into it, then that's works, right? And that's why I think the user experience UX is like one of the most overlooked aspects of everything, which is really dumb, I think. But like people like literally that's if you want anyone to use your product is worthless without a good UX. Not just like, well, it's, you know, it's you guys could be better, but like, no, it's just nothing because you're trying to get humans to use this. If it doesn't work with humans, it sucks. It's worthless, like right away. But so adding this kind of thing, I think is a good way also to get people income. And so that's the thing I realized, like who's going to spend crypto? Well, first off, no one had it. So no one's going to buy it so they can spend it. Just never going to work out. That was like a failed strategy of like the 2017, 18 days and stuff. Like a lot of people like, well, let's get people like, oh, it works so well. Let's, you know, get merchants to take a crypto, like such as Dash. A lot of the Dash people got into that and they're like, well, we'll do this, but then they can buy it in their app and then they can spend it directly. It's so easy to be like, who's going to buy different money just to use it when you could just, nah, no one's going to do that. And then what people started finding out, like several thousand merchants were onboarded in Venezuela in those days, right? In the 2017 and 2018. And, you know, that was great. But there was like so few people actually spending Dash at those merchants because like they don't have it. And like, well, how are you going to get it? We're going to buy it. And not everyone buys it, even though the Bolivars or whatever, you know, it just didn't really click. And then I think it was at Church's Chicken. They implemented this this thing called Dasher Pay, which it's only in Spanish, but it's like workable right now, that it's like a bonus system with crypto that like you can pay your employees a bonus in crypto. You get them like their Dash address and stuff, and then you hit a button, it goes weep, and it distributes from the pot all the way out there. And then what they found from that is the transaction volume at Venezuelan supermarkets and stuff like that do take crypto has been going up in and around the areas and stuff where people have been doing that. And so like you got a couple dozen employees that like get paid in Dash now, not entirely, you know, that's not most of what they get paid, but like they get their bonuses in it now, they have it and they're going to spend it. It's like, oh, earning does, like now they earn it. Now they can spend the money that they earn, not just that they have in a safe or a, you know, a Trezor or something. And now when you get these cash back programs, if assuming people have access to their actual money, right? You know, assuming that it's not like that they can get it and they don't have to do all this KYC shit to just get it off the platform, people will start spending it. And then it's basically it. Then the adoption's kind of like wrapped up at that point.
Yeah, because I thought that social media where you can earn crypto was going to be a much bigger part of the adoption. But I mean, sadly, it just doesn't have enough, like, I guess, awareness or like pull. Because I thought, you know, people would see, oh, you can get free crypto for just like posting what you like, you know, your rants on Twitter, but you could just post that on Read.cash or whatever and just get money. But like, I guess just not enough people were, you know, interested by that, or they just didn't have enough promotion. Education. Just not enough like reach and awareness for people to even like find out about the stuff. But I think if we get that, like you said, if we still got Hive in 5 years and it's going strong, I think that'll be a very, very good use case for adoption via earning on social. I've always thought that that would have been one of the major routes to adoption, was through earning on social. But, you know, we'll see. It might just be people earning from crypto cashback cards, from using Bitwage, from just like accepting crypto. And because it's really about, once you've got some free crypto of some kind, you're like going to figure out all of the technicals and all of those previous excuses where you're like, oh, this is so complicated, like all go out the door once people have free money in their hand and they're like, okay, how do I actually use this? And I mean, at least, and that's what Mark DeMiesel said with Read.cash. He's like, I just want to get Bitcoin Cash to as many people, like into as many hands as possible, and then people will start using it and they'll see, you know, why it's relevant.
Yeah, that's an interesting kind of thing, because it is true. As far as Dan, there's a bunch of points there. To answer the social media bit, I think the reason why incentivized social media things hasn't worked is, I mean, obviously, or wasn't worked well enough, I should say. Although I do know a lot of people who got onboarded by like Steam back in the day, that like they didn't use crypto and now they like Steam people because it's just, that's what works for them.
Myself included.
Yeah. And there's like the same thing with like Odyssey, I think, which has unfortunately gone the other way because of like the lawsuit stuff. But like a lot of people, their first exposure to crypto were library tokens, were credits, because they just wanted to use this cool platform or whatever, and then there you go. And now it's like you're getting fewer of those, and it's becoming fiat monetization again. That's not as strong in that direction. But I think that it's just that the social media platforms just, first off, weren't promoted well enough. They weren't there and providing consistent enough incentives for long enough. And like even like Steam, it like it used to be like, I post a picture of my dinner, $500, oh no. And like it's not as gold rushy anymore, right? But then also, the platforms just kind of suck. Like, today, they're probably okay. Like, I mean, I know Odyssey is. That's, like, the big one that I use. But, like, you know, 3Speak kind of sucked when I was using it. Like, I would never be a user of 3Speak ever. I just upload my crap there and see if people will give me money. But if it's actually good now, it's like, oh, well, that's getting better. It just, I mean, if you use Twitter, like, I use a bunch of different stuff. Twitter is the best user experience for me. You know, Gab kind of sucks. It's a little buggy. MeWe kind of sucks. A little buggy. Mine kind of sucks. It's a little bit buggy. Memo.cash kind of sucks a lot, but I still use it. Like Float, you know, no offense, Chuck, kind of sucks. I mean, the Float beta is like down right now because they're in the middle of transitioning or whatever. We'll see.
I think they're going to do a money grab with NFTs, honestly, but I would be pleasantly surprised if they come out with some sort of blockchain social platform. I don't think that's going to be the case. Like, I don't think content's going to be on blockchain. I don't think any of that is going to be the case. It's just, they've got this like Float NFT that you can buy and it gives you like premium perks and stuff. And I don't know. It just seemed very cash grabby to me. Huh?
It's kind of the route Odyssey went, right? With a premium.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not going to talk too much smack about Float anymore, but like, that's the point, is like all these projects just, they don't have they don't provide the value to the user that the centralized bigwigs do. I mean, with the exception of Facebook, because Facebook's kind of hot garbage, but like, you know, who, like, remember Apex? Did you ever use that one?
Yeah, it was like a Instagram alternative on Hive. Yeah,
Yeah, was it even on Hive or was it on Steam? Because I remember it was on Steam.
Or maybe just on Steam, yeah.
And I think it just died out there or something. But like, I was like, oh, this is cool. And I started trying to use it, and it just like, the joy, like this, like Instagram, this sparks joy. Apex, this does not spark joy. Like, it's just, oh, it's just so terrible. But like, if you had a viable Twitter competitor that had like reasons for people to be on it, people would be on it and getting the crypto from it, you know. It just sucks. That's the problem.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
All right, it's a good time to wrap this thing up. What do you think?
Yeah, this was a good chat.
Cool. Let me I do want to read part of this thing because I got a super chat on, or I got a Coitree donation, more accurately, that could be purposed on this. It is hugely long, but you can't really see much of it. I'll just read a little bit of that. Basically, it's some guy I know, Jonathan, obviously says, "Hi, Joel. It's been a great pleasure following since 2017. Your news articles and videos always help me keep up with Dash and the crypto industry in general. It's been a pleasure to meet you a couple times in person, et cetera, et cetera." A bunch of cool stuff. Like, this is like, it's a novel, so I can't read it here, but just want to give a shout out to that. I will, of course, thank him on directly, not just on the live show, but I figure I might as well double team there, right? So yeah, well, thanks for that. Thanks everyone for tuning in, especially for the first episode in the new space. I wanted to coincide, because I'm doing a little bit of a channel relaunch at some point in the near future. And I kind of wanted to, like, I have like a cooler intro graphic, and I got like, I'm going to add like the NFT little super chat thingies, and I'm going to like all that kind of stuff. I wanted to do it all at once with making a new studio, but unfortunately moving happened before that. So I could do it all at once, but you'll just have to deal with this blank wall, and I'll have a cool jazzed out, whatever. Maybe I'll just do a big old NFT portrait in the back, that when you have the NFT, it's like like one of those digital picture frames that like shows whatever you want it to show, and just someone's gonna put pictures of their genitals on that or something, and I'll have to change it up. But it is what it is. But yeah, look forward to that. Everyone go subscribe to Scott's Business everywhere is around. And what's the next thing you're working on, like big expose and stuff? You said it was money laundering, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch, so I need to be better at just like nailing down one, but I'm always working at all of them at the same time. So I'm doing money laundering, Bitcoin energy use, privacy coin comparison, how stable are stable coins. I've just got so much in the works right now. I mean, the big thing is my review of all of the social crypto platforms and like my recommendations, because a lot are falling out of my recommended category. So that'll be the next big one. About 200 platforms that I've reviewed over the years and looked at. I recently did another expose of SoMe because they're doing another raise on republic.io, unfortunately. I don't know if that's already happened by now, but yeah, that's just a mess.
They got all mad at you again, I remember.
Yeah, and they did another response video. It was like an hour and a half response video that he did for my thing. But I knew right off the bat that it wasn't really like a serious response video, because I said our wallets were turned off, like our access to our funds. And he's like, well, by definition, a wallet can't be turned off, because a wallet is when you have your own keys. And I was like, okay, you know what I'm saying. You prevented me from accessing my funds. Like, come on, guy. So I don't know. It is what it is. But like, anyone who was actually involved in SoMe or used the platform obviously knows what happened. It's more so just about preventing or informing people who might have otherwise invested in it, who are misled, and kind of just like warning those people. But yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't think anything's going to come of it. They've done so many raises so many times and just spent all that money and sold everything and tanked the price.
It's crazy. Yeah. Well, I think at this point, if anyone is investing in SoMe, they kind of know what they're getting into or have it coming. you know, because either know what they're going to get to and want to gamble and just say, well, yeah, but I'm the greater fool, whatever. Or, you know, they're just like too stupid to have money, in which case they won't have money. So I don't think about it. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this big long ramble and all this OMI stuff and all the other stuff. Thanks very much for being on, Scott. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, I will see you guys next week. I don't remember who's on next week, but it'll be that and the Dash podcast right after next week. So anyway, everyone have a great weekend and I'll see you. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on crypto with BitRefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.